super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake. Mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who is always looking for a girl to polish his little soldier's helmet. 42nd Street Pete.
Hey, it's Memorial Day weekend. Of course, this is taped because I'll be at the premiere of Under the Scares. Like I was had Hugo and Steve on last week, and it's going to be a blast. And by the time this airs, I should be falling down drunk as usual at, 10 p.m. EST. So looking forward to doing that. But, getting back to the whole Memorial Day thing, it really isn't about picnics and going down the shore and all this other stuff. It's supposed to be about remembering, the fallen heroes that were, in the wars. And it's funny because what really hit home with me this week was I was walking out of a shop right and there's one of this little old guy standing there selling those poppies. I think that started with World War I or something, Buddy Poppy, they called it or something. And I'm thinking, yeah, there ain't too many of these guys left. And then I was thinking back to when I was a kid, there was actually still guys around that were in the Civil War when I was a kid. And of course, they're all gone. And then my grandfather fought World War I. I think both my grandfathers fought World War I. My father was in the Navy in World War II. So I wasn't in because I never got called. My era was the Vietnam thing. And it's like people say, well, how come you didn't go? And I says, well, I never tried to go. I never tried not to go. I just sat and said, wait, what happened? I wouldn't have been a good soldier anyway. Come on, we both fucking know that.
Yeah. It's true. These people really did sacrifice a lot for this country and for us.
Yeah, and it's like, as a kid growing up, you saw all these war movies, which were basically propaganda packages from the 40s. And, the whole thing about death and dying, you got this really preconceived notion of how it would be when you get shot. You just go, ooh, you throw up your arms and you fall down. It's all nice and neat and shit, when now we know it's anything but.
True.
And it's rough to grow up with those images. And it probably was even rougher for the guys that were in there, because I think that whole Tom Hanks thing with Saving Private Ryan brought it home when they were storming the beaches and shit, just getting ripped to pieces. I mean, we never envisioned that when we were kids. We just thought it was bang, fall down, and die.
True.
Like I said, you get, a weird sense of death and dying. The whole time period, I mean, it was like sanitized in the 50s and stuff, but this was like Sunday afternoon at the movies. I think it was like Channel 5, and they'd run shit like Guadalcanal Diary and Gung Ho and Bataan and all that stuff, and that was all, patriotically fervent shit, which it should have been, because that was supposedly the war to end all wars. But unfortunately, we still have wars going on, and we still have our brave people going over there, basically, to stand up and fight, so we can basically do what we're doing right here. We're talking about it, be it positive or negative. And, I would never downgrade anybody who's in the service. I have the utmost respect for anybody who's in the service, and I, try to do my thing for them. Just I, myself was never in it. So, like I said, I'm probably not good. You can imagine me, taking orders. I'd be, stockade for the rest of my life. But, again, I can't downgrade what people contribute to this country. And, their contributions allow us to do what, we do.
Exactly. Exactly.
That, that enables me to be the loudmouth fuck that I am at times. But, getting back to that whole thing, I was thinking about that, people in the service that came out of the service and went into acting. And that was basically, and still is, our who's who's of character actors for like 3 decades, even 4 decades.
True.
And, it's basically a who's who of, people who started out as, bit players, thugs, criminals, gunmen, bad guys, in the cowboy movies and stuff. And then when you hit into like the late 60s, early 70s, several of these people became like bona fide superstars. So, I was thinking of like trying to dig up certain things on them, and I did.
Cool.
For some reason my throat's getting, I'm going to drink this iced tea. I'm stalling when I drink iced tea. Pacing myself for tomorrow.
You need that, but, yeah.
Yeah. But it was fun. I was watching Hombre on cable the other night, and Richard Boone, here's a guy, he came out of the Navy. And I guess, I only saw him, in his later career. I think he disappeared for a while, then he came back. And I think Aubrey was one of the comeback films, because I think he was probably a leading man in the 40s and 50s. So he comes back and, like, here's this guy, he's on screen, and this guy just projects this aura of menace. And just the way he acts and that, like, whiskey-soaked laugh of his and shit, it just worked. You know, I don't know if you remember the scene when they're in the Stagecoach Station and he needs a ticket and he's going to take Paul Newman's ticket. Then this soldier speaks up and he goes, well, I'll take your ticket. And soldier starts, you know, giving him some shit. He goes, well, we're going to go outside then. Like, nobody's backing the guy up, and you know he's, like, got him completely cornered. And it was another film I really liked. He was in Real Conchos. And I actually think, I just get the impression he was drinking a lot because of the way he was starting to look and shit. But I get the funny feeling he was having a great time ad-libbing because he was like, he acted like he was blitzed in this thing. And it was just one of these rough, I think it was actually, this was actually Jim Brown's first movie.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. He was, it was Richard Boone was the lead, Tony Franciosa, Stuart Whitman, and then it's introducing Jim Brown. So I'm pretty sure that was his first thing. And it's a pretty cool movie. You know who else showed up in there? And I'm going to cover him too, Timothy Carey.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it was, you know, the most unlikely thing. Plus, don't forget, he was Paladin and Half Gun Will Travel.
Yeah.
And he was in also The Big Sleep. It was Lash Camino. He was walking around with a bad foot. He was the brown man, Lash Camino. Brown suit, brown hair, brown woman. Robert Mitchum was Marlo. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, he was in some. Remember that weird spaghetti western, God's Gun, where Lee Van Cleef played twins? One was a priest, one was a gunfighter. And Jack Palance was in it. And Boone was credited in it, but it made no sense whatsoever, because he just showed up at the end as a sheriff and he dubbed in his voice. And it was just weird. Hey, that was another one of those really offbeat movies.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was cool. Oh, you know what triggered this up in my mind? I got to dedicate this segment to this really cool lady I met and became friends with, Beverly, out in California, in Oxnard, California. And we'll get to the Oxnard thing later. So we had a conversation one night, and we were talking about stuff like this. So I figured, you know, it inspired me to sort of do this a little bit. So this one's dedicated to you. And another one, I don't know if he was ever in the service. I think he was, Jack Elam.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he was an accountant before he was an actor. And he only had one eye because he was blinded in one eye after a childhood fight, which basically became his claim to fame. But He was managing a motel, and he was doing accounting for the studios. And they said if he kept on doing it, he would go blind in another eye.
Wow.
So he cut some kind of a deal. He wanted to be in some movies. So he cut some deal, you know, like he did some accounting for some guys that got some roles as heavies and stuff. And then he stayed in as a heavy for a good many years. And if you see this movie, it's public domain. You can pick it up, Kansas City Confidential.
Oh, yeah?
Another guy I'm getting to, Neville Brand, Lee Van Cleef. I'm trying to think of the other guy. But Jack's in it, real skinny Jack, is a drunk.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I don't even know if he was billed or not. I think he was very low billed, but yeah, he's in that. Now you can still pick up for like $2 someplace in the dollar stores. $2 a dollar DVD, but yeah. But yeah, he was around, and you know what I loved about Jack was he did a bunch of John Wayne movies. I know he was in that one, The Common Sheriffs, but the one that John Wayne refused to ever act with him again because he was just chewing up the scenery was Rio Lobo.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and it was like early on, Burt Kennedy had discovered he had a real flair for comedy with those support your local sheriff and support your local gunfighter things. So they'd also. I don't know if you remember this. They had a TV series called Struck by Lightning where he played like this Frankenstein-type monster.
I don't.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. It's really reality radio. I got an allergy. Let's go. No, my head will clog up. I'll need Afrin. But yeah, it was in this... It didn't last too long. It was called Struck by Lightning. He was playing this Frankenstein-type monster. This goofy monster-type thing. Then he was in that one with... He had put on a lot of weight at this stage of the game. He was with the one with Lonnie Anderson. Shit. She was an heiress.
Okay.
They were related to her and this other guy. Fuck, I can't remember the name of the show. God damn. Easy Straight might have been it. I don't know. But I was never big on TV, so forgive me.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And another guy, of course, you know, we all know what the superstar status he became was Charles Bronson. And he was a tail gunner on a bomber during World War II and got a Purple Heart because he was wounded. And, well, you know, we all know the whole story with him. He came up, he was a heavy for a good many years. Roger Corman saw the potential in him and put him in the lead in one of Corman's most respected films, Machine Gun Kelly. And he still, you know, he did a lot of, you know, a lot of war movies, None But the Brave with Frank Sinatra. And it was, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. But then the whole thing with the Magnificent Seven clicked where, you know, it was him, James Coburn, Robert Vaughn, Steve McQueen, Yul Brynner, Horace Buchholz, and Brad Dexter. Manny Wallach is a villain. And, you know, here's a little trivia. The only two alive today are Eli Wallach and Robert Vaughn.
Oh, wow.
Everybody else is gone. But that sort of propelled Bronson up, and so did Dirty Dozen as part of this ensemble thing. But we all know what, you know, where he hit it big was, you know, he was like 53 years old with Death Wish.
Right.
That's the one that kicked him over. And, you know, the other trivia thing is that he was considered for almost all the roles in the Dollars trilogy. And he just never thought it would work. And when he actually did do a Leone film, it was Once Upon a Time in the West, which bombed over here at the time because they had cast Henry Fonda against type as a villain. People wouldn't buy it. But now it's considered one of the best Westerns ever made. It's odd how things change over a period of time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
More iced tea. It's good.
Good but stuff.
The odd thing is, Segway, if you check out a movie called Vera Cruz, where the leads are Burt Lancaster and Gary Cooper, the whole supporting cast is Bronson, Ernest Borgnine, Jack Lambert, Jack Elam, John Denner, Ernest Borgnine. I mean, shit. And these guys, that's where they all started out. So that's an interesting movie to check out just to see how they came up. And, you know, Ernest Borgnine, he was in the Navy for 10 years. And he came up with Lee Marvin. They were friends. And, you know, again, he was in the, you know, typecast as a heavy. You know, he was typed as a slob heavy, this big, you know, burly guy that, you know, beat people up and shit. That whole thing with the sergeant and Fatso Judson where he almost beat Frank Sinatra to death. Here to Eternity.
Ah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. That whole thing. That's what, you know, gave Frank the bump there. But yeah, he'd been around doing that thing. Then he won the Academy Award for Marty. You know, then there was some weird story about he went up with McHale's Navy because he didn't really want to do TV. And then it wound up that everybody was doing TV because that's how you were known. And he did the McHale's Navy thing for, God, how many years did that go? That was a while.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And that, you know, then from there back into the movies, I mean, you know, Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch and, geez, I think he's 90 years old and he's still doing shit. He was at one of the conventions a year or so ago. And he was doing The Odd Couple with Don Rickles.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, yeah, another one that came out of that. And I just said Jack Lambert. People really don't know who Jack Lambert is. He was a very underrated heavy. He was in Machine Gun Kelly. He was the one that they kicked in the door of the card game and they blitzed him. And the best example I could give of what Jack was doing, he was also in another one, I think that Four for Texas, he was the sailor that died in the boat.
Okay.
Laying blown up and shit, but I'm getting ahead of myself there. There's a movie called Day of the Outlaw. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I did not.
Okay, it's sitting around on a Western channel. It's with Robert Ryan, it's Burl Ives, and the gang is made up of Jack Lambert, Frank DeCova, and a couple other guys. And it's real bleak and snowy, and Jack has a cowl over his face. And if you pick up The Great Silence and you look at Kinski, and it's still snowing in The Great Silence, it's almost the same look. So I'm wondering if Sergio Corbucci, who was the director of The Great Silence, had watched that and just picked that, you know, for Kinski, or whether Kinski, you know, who was, you know, a pretty creative guy himself, aside from being a lunatic, but, you know,
yeah,
maybe he had seen, you know, this movie and done it, but, you know. Now, another guy who served, but I'm not so sure he served his country, was Leo Gordon, because he did a sentence in San Quentin for armed robbery. And this is a quote from Don Siegel. He's the scariest man I ever met. And They were filming Riot in Cell Block 11 with him and Neville Brand, and he was not let in with anybody else. He had to be brought in separately and searched on his way in and on his way out because he said, quote, he was a troublemaker when he was there. And this was a guy, he was a totally despicable heavy, and he, but also, you know, okay, he was in Hondo. I think he shot the dog. Remember that?
No, geez.
Yeah. I remember in one film he shot a kid's dog.
That's some evil stuff.
He was always a heel. He did a lot of TV, too. He was always a heel. He was in a lot of Corman stuff, too. He was in The Haunted Palace. And he also wrote a lot of stuff for Corman, like Wasp Woman, The Giant Leeches. He also wrote Tobruk and wrote himself in a role as one of the sergeant in there. So he had done a lot of shit.
I think he was actually
did you see the Mel Gibson Maverick?
Yeah, I did.
Remember the first card game?
Yeah.
He was the guy sitting there with the hat on, with the mustache. He didn't look too good. I think he was on his way out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but he was a real scary guy. And I remember it was a commercial with him and Neville Brand for that. I don't know if you remember when they were doing the Brillo commercials. I know Tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in one of the commercials, him and Neville Brand together.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, so going on to Neville Brand, I mean, you know, I may as well because they were sort of like buddies and stuff. You know, Neville Brand was supposedly the second most highly decorated serviceman in World War II after Audie Murphy, something he denied before he died. He says that was a rumor, but he had, you know, done duty in Japan and had a lot of medals. I think the Silver Star, Congressional Medal of Honor, Purple Heart, the whole thing. And he, you know, just went right into acting and, you know, he did a lot of, you know, Halls of Montezuma he was in. A lot of war stuff. And then, you know, he did a lot of gangster stuff, too. I think he played Al Capone a lot. I think it was Scarface and Scarface Mob or something. I think he might have played him on TV, too. Then he was in Laredo on TV, I believe. He did a lot of Western stuff. He was in this really nasty Western, Deadly Trackers. The gang was comprised of Rod Taylor, William Smith, him. Who the fuck was the other guy? I can't remember this other dude. But yeah, and he had a hand that was part railroad track or something. He something fucked up, and that was his gimmick. Instead of a hook, he had a real piece of a railroad track. It was a nutty fucking movie. Really bloody movie, too. And then he played an Indian in that John Wayne movie. I think it was a Cahill U.S. Marshal. He played an Indian in that. He had done a lot of stuff, but then the whole thing was he drifted into Toby Hooper used him on Eaten Alive. And Toby Hooper said he was really roughing up the actors, you know, in his scenes. Because he said he was sitting there reading the script and he goes, I know this guy. I am this guy. And he really got into it. And then Hooper realized that, you know, this was a guy who probably saw a lot of hand-to-hand combat in the war and probably actually killed a lot of people with his hands. Because he was really roughing guys up. But the last movie on the list... Well, he also... Ninth Configuration, Twinkle Twinkle Killer Kane. He was in that. He was the sergeant. Did you ever see that movie?
Yes, I did. It's been a long time, though, man. See,
this is a must-watch for anybody listening to this. The Ninth Configuration by William Peter Blatty. You have to see it. You'll just sit there. Trust me. I'm not even going to go into it, what it's about. It's one of the most mesmerizing films I have ever seen. You will just sit there. It's on a par with El Topo as far as a midnight movie, because that's where I saw it, at the 8th Street Playhouse on a weekday at midnight. And I was like, you know, you're sitting out there drinking beer before you go in. And I was so mesmerized by this film. I had to piss so bad I wouldn't get up. It was over. I mean, it was incredible. It had that much power. So it's Ninth Configuration. I think it should still be available. We hope it's available. It's a great film.
Unfortunately, movies like that fall into, like, what do they call it? Moratorium? Where they don't put them out enough. Like, they'll go out of print, and then they'll be out of print for 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, it sucks. Well, you know what it is, too? There's a lot of... Everything's so catered toward now instead of what was. It just sucks.
Well, and you know, you got to have plenty of room for those Tyler Perry movies.
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. I'm telling you.
Nightmare.
That and all this other fucking direct-to-video crap that makes anything I've ever been involved in look like Oscar-winning material. But I digress. There was another guy, too. I don't know if you remember Ray Danton. He played Legs Diamond.
Oh, yeah.
The Lake Diamond story. And he was also, I think, in the George Raft story, too. I think he played George Raft.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was working in Europe for a while, and he directed Robert Quarry in The Death Master.
That's awesome. Great movie. Underrated.
Oh, yeah. But unfortunately, he died of kidney failure. He was, 61, I believe.
I was going to say he was kind of young.
Yeah. Now, here's a real wild card. Timothy Carey. Timothy Angola Carey. He was one. He was uncredited in The Wild One. He was part of Lee Marvin's gang. And if you remember Paths of Glory.
I don't. Stanley. See that. You know what? I gotta make a confession. Westerns and army movies just weren't my thing too much. Okay. I liked Clint Eastwood westerns, though. I love those, and I love the Italian westerns. The weird one, like, for instance, did you know that Lucio Fulci had a western called Scalps? And, like, it was the goriest thing ever, man. They were like, he had something to do with it. I can't remember what it was, but his name was in the credits, and that thing played the drive-in. Are you
thinking of the Gunman of the Apocalypse?
I don't know.
Or for the Apocalypse? The thing with Michael J. Pollard when he
cut No. This is the one. It's a full-on western, and he, like, scalps people, man, and blood's just, like, spraying everywhere.
Shit, that one's in, I don't know. I might have heard of that. I know. I have Massacre Time. He did that. That was Franco Nero and George Hilton.
Right.
And I have For the Apocalypse because that was out on Blue Underground. Oh, no, I don't think that was him. The only other one he did was Silver Saddle.
I think he had something to do with it, but I don't know what it was.
Look it up on the IMDb, I'm pretty sure. And I'm not even, you know, I'm just, he did, and you can almost see, we're getting off topic, but what the fuck. When you watch For the Apocalypse and you see some of the gore in that, you can almost see where he's headed as far as when he got into the horror. Because he was already transitioning from the spaghetti western, like, Massacre Time wasn't that gory. I didn't see Silver Saddle yet. I got into my pile of shit to watch, but it's sort of like, he's transitioning it into the gore effect. Because Michael J. Pollard cuts a piece of that guy's ass off and eats it. Oh, that guy cuts a piece of Michael J. Pollard's ass off and eats it.
Remember? You know what it is? It's directed by Bruno Mattei and Claudio Fragasso, but Lucio was attached to it, and he had something to do with the script, but he didn't finish it.
Okay, yeah, well, I'll figure Bruno Mattei. But anyway, we lost track. We were on Timothy Carey.
Sorry.
Well, he was in Paths of Glory, and he did a lot of improvising, which they let in for a while, but he sort of had a penchant for doing that, a penchant for doing a lot of other shit. He was in this, I don't know if Corman actually directed it or not, or Corman might have directed it and sold it to somebody else because the IP didn't release it. Was another western too. Now I can't remember. But he was playing Billy Catch, sharpshooter. Yeah, fuck. I'm trying to think what the hell name was it. It's always on the Western Channel though. I always fuck up on that. Yeah, but also, you know, he turned down the Godfather 1 and 2 because he was doing something else.
Oh man, you're kidding.
His own little projects and shit. And Jack Nicholson and John Cassavetes loved him. Cassavetes cast him in that, you know, The Killing of a Chinese Bookie.
Right.
Yeah. And he did a lot of TV, too. A couple more westerns. He's just popped up all over. He was actually teaching acting. Fortunately, he died in 94 of a stroke. I think he was only 65. But he was a character, though. You know, and then the other, you know, I'm omitting the best thing he ever did, The World's Greatest Sinner. I think they've run it on TMC when they were doing an After Midnight thing, and I don't have anything to tape it on, but I've seen a really grainy bootleg of it, and that's insane. He might have been legitimately nuts. Twisted genius. Gotta blow my nose again.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Brought to you by Claren.
I'm saying, geez.
Which I should fucking take one. I got a box in front of me. They could be our corporate sponsor. Keep 42nd Street Pete breathing. Papa Claren.
There you go.
Those are Bobby. Good. Springtime always sucks. It's officially the first, what, it's summer now?
Yeah, I think it is. But
I think it's for the segue anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, you know, my perennial favorite, Levi and Cleave, who I've, you know, discussed in depth And a quote from him was, being born with beady eyes was the best thing that ever happened to me. And, you know, here's another weird parallel. He was an accountant, too, just like Jack Elam. And he was in the Navy. And which is funny because when he's doing that thing, the Stranger and the Gunfighter, or Blood Money, or whatever they're calling it now, right. He's got his shirt off. It's a visible tattoo of an anchor. Yeah, so that's a Western. He's got an anchor tattooed to him. But, yeah, he was a Jersey boy, too. And, you know, like I said, there was a close parallel with what he was doing, what happened with Sid Haig, when they both basically got disgusted about being bad guys and hung it up for a while till somebody made him an offer to get him back out and gave him some, you know, better stuff. So, you know. And, you know, the other thing is, I alluded to something about Oxnard or something.
Right.
That's where he lived right before he died. Or he may have died when he was living there in Oxnard, California.
Really?
It was this weird parallel because, I'm not going to say what I know. I was telling somebody I was going to throw a weird parallel in about Oxnard, and that was it. That's where he died, Oxnard, California. I think it was 94.
Wow.
Much more. He was, you know, well, he had a lot of heart problems too. Fred Olen Ray was, I think, one of the last guys to direct them, and he said that, you know, unfortunately, you know, and I didn't say this before, but a lot of these guys were heavyweight boozers, I guess because of coming out of the war and seeing what they had seen. And Fred had told me that, you know, he had to pick him up and drive him back and forth to work. That when I think the last thing he did was that armed response thing, or the Jade Jungle, with David Carradine, who also was no longer with us. And Mako, who was no longer with us. That sucks.
I know, all of them are gone.
Yeah, but even Beverly Garland told me when they were doing It Conquered the World, you know, she said he was just such a nice guy, but, you know, he would start reeking of vodka in the middle of the day. So, you know, a lot of guys had problems like that. But, you know, hey, what the fuck? When you see a lot of shit, you know, what the hell?
Maybe they're trying to get rid of it out of their heads, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's another one. I don't know if you ever read Robert Mitchum's book, Baby, I Don't Care.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. They were describing something he was doing with Jack Palance. And Jack Palance had a habit of, like, really getting into character. And it was a fight scene. You were in trouble. Before Jack was an actor, he was a boxer. Legit. And they were saying sometimes you found out you were in a fight for your life because he just got into the whole deal and just wouldn't stop. And he got shot down in World War II. That's her whole reconstructed face. That's what Jack is. Man. He was shot down. He had bad facial burns and scarring. And, you know, his big thing was, you know, his ultimate, you know, bad guy performance was Shane when he gunned down Elijah Cook Jr. And, you know, he just, you know, kept it up right until the end. I mean, Jack was, like, you know, one of the greatest villains ever. But also, you know, would appear in shit. You know, he also did a Corbucci film. Okay, the one with Franco Nero, Professional Gun.
Okay, yeah.
The Mercenary was released over here as The Mercenary.
Right.
And then he did another one, I'm trying to think, the one with the hawk, where the hawk ate his hand.
I didn't see that one.
Hawk eating his hand. He was like, they nailed him to a tree and his pet hawk had to free him and ate his hand or something. You know what?
I may have seen that after all. Yeah, maybe you're right.
It's Blue Underground's got it out. I can't. Oh, what? It's the kids. Oh, shit. Compañeros.
Okay.
Compañeros, yeah. The Compañeros. You're fucking saying it wrong. The Compañeros, yeah. Because he was in a bunch of them. I mean, like I said, the worst of them was the God's Gun one. They all, you know, that one just fucking out now. It sucked. And the Killabot was this, the guy who directed it was Gio Frankie Parolini, who, you know, a.k.a. Frank Kramer, who had done the Sabata films.
Right, right.
This one really stunk. God.
Everybody's entitled to stinker once in a while.
Yeah, that was really bad. Oh, you know, also speaking of Elijah Cook Jr., now here's another guy. I think he was in the Navy, too. But in a weird twist of fate, he died with co-star Elizabeth Montgomery on the same day in May 18th, 1995.
Weird.
Yeah, and they were both in Johnny Cool.
Man.
His whole thing was, a lot of guys said, you know, he very rarely made it past the second reel. He was always getting killed. He was always like this whiny little bad guy, this treacherous little killer. You ever see Stanley Kubrick's The Killing?
Yeah.
he was great in that. And then, you know, he was in The Haunted Palace. Did a lot of Corman stuff in later years.
Corman loved the character actors. He always gave a lot of work to those guys because they kind of carried the films. I mean, in a lot of ways, that's who you remembered, you know?
Yeah, he was in that, I don't know, what the hell was it? Messiah of Eul or Screaming, Curse of the Screaming, Ass Laughing, Nail Biting Dead or something like that.
I like that movie a lot. I don't even know why. Not much happens, but I sure like it.
It was made by someone who had something to do with American Graffiti.
Yeah, a couple of the people. And also, I think Richard Donner was involved and some other people. And yeah. It was crazy how many people got their start in low-budget B-flicks.
Everybody starts somewhere.
I love it. I'd rather watch those.
Yeah, also, you know, I forgot to say it with Timothy Carey, too. He was in The Killing, too. He was the sniper.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, that to me is the whole era, dude. I mean, like, if you go, like, you know, a lot of guys will say the 40s, and I'll have to agree with them. My whole era was like the 50s right up until the late 80s, and it just started getting, like, as retarded as it is now. You know, nobody doing nothing.
Well, you know, it's like people talk to me about that movie Brain Scan with the trickster as the and I, you know, I'm sorry, but that in my mind that was kind of the beginning of the end for horror for a while, because everything was like the Shocker and the trickster, and I mean it's a here's a villain, a movie monster that comes off of a CD-ROM in a video game. It just kind of crossed over into this weird. The Leprechaun movies were coming out, and all this junk. And at that time, all Charles Band would put out were puppets. I was like, oh my god, I can't tell. That's why Full Moon folded, because how many movies can you watch about puppets? It's time. I mean, I know a lot of people love The Puppet Master, and let me tell you, I liked some of them. But it got to the point where every movie he made was about miniature monsters. I don't care what it was.
Yeah, no, when it got to be the Doll Man versus Demonic Toys, when they do some fucking outtakes in 15 minutes of new footage, that was retarded.
Well, Demonic Toys, and then there was those other toys. I can't remember what those were called. And then, you know which ones I'm talking about. And then they had the little miniature monsters. Then they had the midget monsters. And you know me and midgets, that was it for me. I was done. It was over.
Oh, then you're going to love this. Did you know they're having midget wrestling on Spike now?
Yeah, I know. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enough, man.
I know. Well, you know, I found a site for you with midget t-shirts if you want to go shopping.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you. Thanks a lot.
I may surprise you. I may go Christmas shopping for you there.
Thanks. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah. Well, here's another one that, you know, transcended being a character actor, won an Academy Award, Lee Marvin.
Of course, yeah.
Well, the veteran of Marines, Battle of Saipan. Was actually shot in the ass. That's shot in the ass, and he said his commanding officer got they were closing in, and his commanding officer got some kind of diversion going where they could get him out. And his commanding officer, he said that he goes, Captain Bob Keeshan was the toughest man he ever met. And you know who Captain Bob Keeshan turned out to be?
Who's that?
Captain Kangaroo.
Holy cow, Captain Kangaroo was an asshole.
Yeah, well, Captain Kangaroo was Lee Marvin's commanding officer in World War II.
Nice.
Yeah, that little trivia for you.
Man, you're full of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and of course, we all know the whole Cat Ballou thing. But, you know, here's the other segue. He got offered, this was a little power play I heard, because Sergio Leone wanted him for a few dollars more with the role which Lee Van Cleef got. And it was some kind of little power play where, at the 11th hour, he decided he wanted a little bit more money than Sergio could pony up, and then all of a sudden he got the shot to do Cat Ballou, and he jumped, and the rest is history. So, who knows where it would have went, because I never saw Paint Your Wagon, but somehow I don't think that Clint Eastwood and Lee Marvin are like a real good mix. I just don't see that happening.
I'll just say this. Paint Your Wagon I had to play when I was working at that Revival Theater, and I would never watch it. I'd have to actually put the film together, and I'd have to screen it, but I would always pay one of the other employees to sit through it.
Yeah.
I couldn't
it was
do it,
pretty
man.
Bad. Well, you know, he was just so, you know, so good. And the other thing was, you know, him and Ernest Borgnine in Emperor of the North. You know, that was another one. That was a great film. And, you know, of course, The Dirty Dozen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then, let's see, what else did he do? Point Blank.
You don't want to know my favorite, Ernest Borgnine, and this is funny because he's not even in it. There's two movies I love with him, and he's not even in them as much as he is some of the others, but The Wild Bunch, of course, and the Black Hole. I liked them both. Those were my two favorites that he did.
Yeah, The Wild Bunch was great. There was a, you know, the weird thing is there was a movie out right after The Wild Bunch called The Revengers with him and William Holden, and some they were almost like spaghetti western people. Well, and it was like really violent and shit. You can't get it. The only place I ever saw it was, you know, on Australian DVD. It's out of print now or something.
Damn.
But it's a Paramount release, and you can't get it. It's really nasty and violent, but it's got like a, one of the guys who was one of the peasants from the Magnificent Sevens in the bunch, and a couple of guys that were in spaghetti westerns, and then, you know, Holden and Borgnine.
It's unbelievable that amazing that how, you know, The Wild Bunch just came out on Blu-ray. And watching it again, man, that flick was so damned violent for its time. I mean, you're talking gore, man. People.
Oh, I know. I saw that at a place called the Embassy Theater. It came out in 69, I think. So I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it was right. And I went on a Sunday afternoon, and it was this big panoramic screen, and I was fucking mesmerized by the whole thing. I called up, don't even pick me up. I'm staying to see it again.
You know what, for me, it was when they did the revival, the first revival. I got to see it in the theaters, and what was that, the late 70s, they did a revival. Then they brought it back again in the restored version just a little bit ago, and I got to play it on that great big 150-foot screen, and man, people loved that movie.
I told you that story about when I saw the revival back in the 70s. It was on Double Bill with Mean Streets.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I said it. Did I ever say this on the air? Did I ever tell the story on the air?
I don't know if you did. I don't think so.
Oh, fuck it, we'll tell it anyway.
Good.
It was a revival theater up by me called The Park, and they were running, like, they ran King Kong and Son of Kong. One time they ran both Mondo Connies back to back, and they were running Mean Streets and The Wild Bunch. So I get up there, and you know, Mean Streets is running, you know, and all of a sudden it ends, and like I said, there's a tangible excitement building in the audience, and it opens up, and they, you know, they go through the whole thing, and then when it gets to that classic line with William Holden, if anybody moves, kill him, and it freezes, directed by Sam Peckinpah, there was a pop that blew the fucking roof off that movie theater. I have never, ever in my life ever seen a reaction like that in a grindhouse, where everybody just completely popped for that fucking thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But, yeah.
That's a great movie.
Oh, and speaking of that, not that he was in it, but, you know, here's another guy that, like, for some reason reminded me a lot of Charles Bronson, was Claude Atkins.
And, yeah.
He was also in the service. He fought in the Burma and the Philippines. And he was in the second Magnificent Seven movie, The Return of the Seven.
I have another Lucio Fulci connection, because Lucio was involved with The Curse, which...
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, Claude Atkins.
Yeah, that was like really late on.
I like that.
Because also, Devil's Brigade, he was in that. He was great in that. He did a lot of westerns. He did a lot of TV stuff. Oh, BJ and the Bear. Yeah, he did a lot of stuff. He was... like I say, you know, a lot of people, you know, he was somewhat similar to Bronson in some ways, but he was bigger. He was a bigger guy. People don't realize that Bronson wasn't really that big of a guy. But, Claude, unfortunately, he died in 94 of cancer. Claude did. But he was another good character actor. Very great screen presence with him. And, of course, this guy's one of my all-time favorites, William Smith. He was... he was in the Air Force in the Korean War. He speaks... I don't know if you ever met him. I met him at a convention a couple of times. Speaks fluent Russian. He started acting. He was one of the little kids in Son of Frankenstein.
No way.
But no, when they were playing the kickball, when they kicked the girl's ball up on the roof.
Yeah.
He was one of the kids.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, the John Wayne of the biker flicks. You know, that's what he was known as. I mean, he did, you know, Run, Angel, Run. The hell was the other one? The all-time, the one in the Philippines, The Losers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That one, you know, that one with Adam Rourke and Paul Coslow and all those guys. And then, you know, of course, Grave of the Vampire.
Oh, yeah.
One of my all-time favorites. You know, that's one of the most underrated films of all time is Grave of the Vampire.
You know, I was so mad because they just put a new version of that out. It looked beautiful. I mean, beautiful. Fred put it out on his label.
But I got that. Dark.
Do you have that? The one I just got, I cannot get it to sync up. The voices don't match the mouths, man. It looks like I'm watching some crazy-ass French movie or something.
Is that the Blood Flood one?
It might be. It's got the three movies. Yeah.
I didn't have that problem, but then again, I might have been stoned while I'm watching it. So.
Ah, Demon, man, you probably got a good one. I tried two copies, and I finally gave up.
Yeah, well, I heard he put out the Flesh Eaters by himself, and I think they pulled it off because I think someone would have said something, but they said his is different. Everybody's is different. Somebody went down to, like, milliseconds. I'm like, give me a fucking break.
The Grave of the Vampires, actually, you know, he's released it a couple of times in that last version on that Blood Flood thing. It's, like, a really nice, crisp version. I was like, man.
It's a little dark, though, but...
Yeah, it is, but it's so much nicer.
Well, they run something on cable, and it's letterboxed, and it's crystal clear. I don't know why. It's the whole MGM deal, I think.
I think you're right.
If people don't know, the whole MGM thing is they're bankrupt and nobody knows what the fuck's going on with anything they have now. So,
well, it's got bought out by several different people through the years, and now we don't know who owns what. I know Sony owns a lot of it. I don't know what the hell's going on. I just know it needs to get put out, and everyone's on hold, and it's just they're sitting on all those amazing movies, man. Come on.
Well, here's a guy. This guy was a fixture in movies because Richard Jekyll. He was a mail runner for 20th Century Fox, and they coaxed him into being in Guadalcanal Diary, where he always was like the perpetual, you know, baby-faced soldier. But then he actually was in the Navy from 44 to 48. Then he came out and just became, you know, a fixture as a character actor. He could play, like, you know, well, he was a sergeant in the Dirty Dozen. He was one of the gang in 310 of Yuma, the original one. He was in also in a couple Peckinpah movies. I believe Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, he was in that. A couple John Wayne films. I mean, the guy was all over the map. And he worked for Bill Greffy, who we both met. And I remember the story that he had Richard for a couple days. They were doing Mako, Jaws of Death, with John Davis Chandler and Harold Sakata. And something happened where the prop hit Richard in the side of the head and split his head open. So Bill's like, holy fuck, we're gonna lose all these days and this and that. Richard came to work the next day and he goes, well, what are you doing? He goes, no, I can do this. He goes, just shoot me like this. You won't even see it. That's how professional the guy was. He was just happy to work. And they wanted to use, Joe Dante wanted to use him as a voice in one of the Little Soldiers thing he did.
Yeah, Small Soldiers. Yeah.
But unfortunately, he died of a melanoma right before they could use him.
That was a cool little movie, too. I love Joe Dante.
Yeah. And he always gave these guys work, but you know, Richard was one of the best. I was like, where he was too, in The Dark. Remember the movie The Dark?
Oh yeah, yeah.
He was a detective in The Dark.
Bud Cardos, John Bud Cardos.
John Bud Cardos, worst Mohawk of all times and Satan sadist. Another guy, George Kennedy. You know, hugely popular guy. He did serve in World War II. Again, another guy who just, you know, cast as a big heavy until the whole Cool Hand Luke thing. And another guy who played the Magnificent Seven as Chris, the leader, in Guns of the Magnificent Seven. And he was also in the Dirty Dozen, bunch of B stuff with, you know, Dave Dakota and Fred Olin Ray.
Oh, yeah.
You know, God, what was that one he did with Michelle Bauer? Death something. I can't. Jesus, just so many of those little cheesy things that they did. He did, Just Before Dawn for Jeff Lieberman.
That was a great little flick. That
little Billy. Yeah. Sons of Katie Elder, which I was always in a John Wayne movie. Always getting the shit knocked out of him by John Wayne, too. But, you know, and then The Human Factor, which is a grossly underrated movie, which is out. You guys should check that out. He was really good in that. And, God, what else was he in? Ton of stuff. Like, he's a big dude, too. He's like 6'4".
True, true.
Watching some of the extras on this stuff. But, yeah. A lot of stuff he did. Cool Hand Luke, you know, that was what made him Cool Hand Luke. That got him the Academy Award, I think, Best Supporting Actor.
That's true.
And then, you know, here's another guy who started out as, you know, somewhat of a leading man and ended up, doing, like, they called it Grade Z Direct, was Cameron Mitchell. And he was a World War II Air Force bombardier.
Jeez.
He was doing musicals and stuff, and then, remember the TV series High Chaparral? He was Buck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then he just took this, I don't know, some kind of downhill slide. I don't know whether he had a problem with booze or something or whatever, but, okay, Nightmare in Wax, The Toolbox Murders, Island of the Doomed, or that Maneater Hydra, whatever the hell it was, where he played the Count. God, a bunch of shit. And then he did, he was in a porn, not in the porn film itself, not in the sex part of it, but Dixie Ray Hollywood star.
Really?
Yeah, he did a cameo as a detective.
Oh, wow.
He didn't even do any sex. It was the same with Al Del Rey. Al Del Rey did one in Sweet Savage. Huh. I think these guys were that down and out at that stage of the career, which is really sad because these guys were good actors.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, he had done the Toolbox Murders, which was one of the sleaziest slasher films of all times.
Was that
and really also, cool? he had done Corbucci's Minnesota Clay, the blind gunfighter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Blind gunfighter. So, yeah, he was, he did a lot of stuff, like I said, but unfortunately, you know, I guess toward the end it was pretty bad. And another guy vastly underrated was Broderick Crawford. Here's a big dude. He was actually an announcer for, what the hell was it, during World War II? The Armed Forces Network. He was an announcer.
Oh.
He was in service doing that, which, you know, fits into our motif tonight. He also was playing Lenny from Mice and Men on Broadway, but he got sidestepped by Lon Chaney Jr. For the movie. And I don't know if you know this, him and Lon Chaney Jr. were great friends.
Yeah, yeah.
They used to beat the crap out of each other when they got drunk in dressing rooms and shit. They said that's another thing that, you know, sort of hindered Broderick Crawford was because of, you know, he got an attitude when he got shit-faced, I guess. But he always played the heavies. He was always a great heel, you know, in the westerns and shit, you know, gunning people down. And then some of the horror stuff. I mean, you remember The Vulture? You can't even find that. He played a British squire.
Wow.
Remember when he played he was one of the Goliath movies? He played some kind of emperor or something. He got eaten by snakes. Goliath the Dragon, I think it was.
Yeah, awful.
Yeah. But, yeah, he and then, you know, he was M Squad on TV, and he did, you know, a lot, he did some Al Adams and shit too. I think Hell's Bloody Devils, Highway Patrol, you know, shit. He was a pretty good actor. Just, you remember the story with him with there was a film called Young Doctors, and whoever cast this thing obviously didn't know what he was doing because they cast Robert Mitchum, Lee Marvin, Broderick Crawford, and Frank Sinatra. Four of the most powerful drinkers in the history of Hollywood. So, for whatever reason, Sinatra used to break Crawford's balls. And Crawford, you know, probably wasn't the easiest guy to get along with from the get-go. And during the scene, he snapped and he started fighting Sinatra and actually ate the toupee off Sinatra's head. And then almost started choking on it and spit it out. So they had to keep these guys separated. So to decide, I got this. This was from that Robert Mitchum book I was telling you about. They were hanging out with Joe DiMaggio in one bar, and he was lamenting over this whole thing about, you know, breaking up with Marilyn Monroe. Now, Frank Sinatra claimed he knew where Marilyn Monroe was staying in town. So all these guys are there, and the drunker they get, they come up with a plan. And the plan is they're going to go take Joe to Marilyn and knock down her door and reunite the two. So, again, you know, they're saying that, you know, the more they're drinking, the better this sounds, but they don't think they got a guy who's big enough to take down the door. So they go to decide to find Broderick Crawford, who's just as shit-faced as they are at this stage of the game in another bar, and they go to where they think she is and crash down the door, and there's some little old lady in bed. And she calls the cops, and what happened? He goes, a bunch of movie stars broke into my room. Oh, and in the book, they asked the guy, they go, well, how come you're telling it now? He goes, well, I can tell it now because everybody involved is gone. Just sad, but it's a good story. And then there was, I don't know if you remember this name, Alex Nicole.
I know the name.
Okay, well, he was a tech sergeant in World War II. You would know him because he directed The Screaming Skull.
Ah, yeah.
He also cast himself in a fifth bill. And he also directed some of the Tarzan stuff with Ron Eli, I think the TV series.
Wow.
And he did a lot of, you know, another thing, you know, the genre you don't really watch, the westerns and the war. And see, there's another reason I really watch them is because they're character actors. That's how I, you know, got into this whole thing.
That's true.
So, actually, he went over to Europe, but he popped up in a couple of spaghetti westerns. Gunfighters at Casa Grande and Ride and Kill, which were like really early 60s stuff. And I had seen them, you know, late at night because I don't know if I had gone through that whole thing about late night TV growing up where it like basically it cut off like usually at 1:30 in the morning.
Right, yeah.
So you'd get something like 11:30, and that would be filler. And usually when they went later, like they started running shit after 1 o'clock, they'd throw that in. That's where I saw like Gunfighters at Casa Grande, Minnesota Clay, and all that shit. Because that was the only thing they had for programming back then. Now it's like they got way too much shit.
Right.
So, and actually, his last film was, remember this film, Ape, the one from Korea?
Yes.
Yeah. That was his last film.
That's a pretty awful movie, but I like it.
Yeah.
Well, so, we were talking about that movie with Michelle Bauer, and I'm trying to remember the name. It's like, who were we talking about that was in that? I forget.
George Kennedy.
George Kennedy, yeah. What the hell was the name
of that thing? That's... Demon Warp!
Demon Warp, that's it.
Demon
Warp.
Demon Warp. Yeah, okay.
That's it.
Which nobody has put out yet.
I've got it on VHS still.
Oh, I think I got two of them on VHS, but I think I get tape hold them together or something.
Well, it's got that Bigfoot thing, right? And it's a spacecraft thing.
Yeah, they're tearing people's hearts out and shit, and zombie chicks walking around with their eyeballs hanging out. What clean American fun. Yeah. Shit that you would make if you had half a budget, you know?
Yeah, almost. Well, except for I wouldn't make it as slow as Demon Warp. It was so slow. It was just slow.
I just like Michelle Bauer at that stage.
I do, too. I'm a Michelle Bauer fan.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what she's doing. I told Ken maybe we should, you know, try to get a hold of her. I saw her in that last Fred Olen Ray thing with Nashe.
Right.
Did you see that one?
Yeah. What was that? I've got it, actually. The Tomb of the Werewolf.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I got it, too. She actually reminds me of Gail Songard now.
Yep.
From the 40s.
Yep, she's still cool as hell. Still cool.
Oh, yeah.
She got about 3 minutes. 2 minutes.
And she took her top off.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they used to call it the terminally topless Michelle Bauer. I always got along with her. I'm really sorry I lost touch with her. We had a great time back in the day, hanging out and drinking and smoking weed and shit. It was wonderful.
Yeah, she was
a real down-to-earth person, you know, exactly. Really good. Probably still is.
Yep.
Someday.
I have her autograph somewhere. She autographed a whole bunch of stuff for me.
Yeah.
Because I was there in working capacity, I still said, hey, I got to get some stuff signed because I'm still a fanboy.
Yeah. You're still a mark at heart. On that happy note, we here at the Grindhouse, we send our best out to our friends in the armed forces and stuff. We hope they come back safe. We hope this stuff ends pretty soon. And, you know, when you're walking around, you know, this weekend, you see a guy selling the poppies with that can, throw a couple bucks in there, man, because, you know, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing here, and you wouldn't be doing what you're doing and celebrating that day and having that barbecue and driving down the shore. So the people who have passed, God bless you. We thank you for your sacrifice. This is 42nd Street Pete here at the Grindhouse. I'll be at the bar somewhere in Tribeca. Hopefully I won't be in jail. So until then, stay sick.
Second Street Pete's Grindhouse is a production of Jackalope 105 FM.
Do you feel that? Oh, shit. Oh, wah-ah-ah-ah. Wah-ah-ah-ah. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up. Come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Madness is the gift that has been given to me. I can see inside you the sickness is rising. It seems that all that was good has died. Oh no, the world is a scary place. Now that you've woken up the demon in me.
Bobby, will you give it to me?
2, 3, 4. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up. Come on, get down with the dickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Why can't you just fuck up and die? Get down with the sickness. Fuck you, I don't need this shit. I'm down with the sickness. You stupid, sadistic, abusive fucking organ. Down with the sickness. Here it comes. Get ready to die. Get ready.
come on. Here we go again, motherfucker. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on down and see the idiot right here. Too fucked to beg and not afraid to care. What's the matter with calamity anyway? Right, get the fuck out of my face. Understand I can't feel anything. It isn't like I wanna sift through the decay. I feel like a wound, like I got a fucking gun against my head. You live when I'm dead. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. Come on. Me now, so fuck it. Blood on my face and my hands, I don't know why. I'm not afraid to cry, but that is none of your business. Overdo it, don't tell me you blew it. Stop your bitching and fight your way through it. I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit.